it's time for Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. And today, our very special guest, Jim Bohannon.
Oh, that's right. I've been having a great conversation here, sitting here with Jim Bohannon. He's our nationally syndicated radio talk show host, and he is here live in Greenwood. If you want to come on by, he's here. If you want to give us a call and ask him a question, we're taking calls here. Telephone man Jeff is on the phone taking those calls. You know you can call us, 229-6613. But Jim Bohannon, it truly is a pleasure to have you here today.
Well, Ann Eller, thank you very much for inviting me. I do appreciate it.
Oh, that's right. So, were you working last night?
I did. I
thought I heard you on the radio last night.
I did, absolutely. I have a little studio in my lake home down on Lake Hartwell, and I was on the air last night, indeed.
Oh, you mean
back on the air tonight.
So does that mean that you come down here to South Carolina on kind of a regular basis?
Oh, not that regular, but occasionally.
But occasionally.
Occasionally, yeah. Oh,
that's great. And this morning, where were you this morning?
Oh, I went to visit my friend Wayne Morton over at the station in Walhalla.
Well, okay. Yeah. So you were on the air this morning, drove down here. And here he sits, folks, right here on Meet Me at the Diner, right here at Shark Facets Gallery. Well, you know, I've tried to think of all the things I could ask you. And, you know, one of the things I always like to ask people is, when they were young, like really young, what did they think they wanted to be in this world?
Oh, my goodness, Ann. I wanted to be an astronomer, and I wanted to be an entomologist, a bug scientist. And I really never focused that hard on any of those things. And in high school, our local radio station in my hometown of Lebanon, Missouri, KLWT, we called it Keep Listening, We're Trying, and they were the local station, and I thought, you know, since I was kind of the white Steve Urkel of Lebanon, Missouri, the class nerd, the geek, and I thought, you know, if I was on that station spinning those records, I'll bet that I would improve my chances of getting a date, which was moderately successful, but in the process, I stumbled across this career. I'll never forget my first boss, Jack Sellers, general manager. At the time I entered radio, and I will, by the way, have achieved 50 years in radio February.
Wow.
The minimum wage was $1 an hour. Jack Sellers, the general manager, explained to me, he said, you know, Jim, we'd pay you what you're worth, but it's illegal. I thought, okay, you don't have to telegraph that to me, Jack. I get the picture.
Well, that's pretty interesting. 50 years in radio. So how did you, okay, so you were doing that just really for fun.
For
and
fun,
to meet
a few
women.
Yucks, a few bucks, yeah, exactly.
And then you went off to college.
Went off to college, Missouri State in Springfield, Missouri. I was a big rock and roll disc jockey there. The stacks of wax and the picks to click. People, if someone had said you need an adenoid operation, I would have had some put in. See, that kind of thing. I got to meet the Beatles on their American tour.
Well, how was that? About that.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I've never seen such mass pandemonium in my life. We took 3 busloads of kids from Springfield. The Beatles performed at the second base of the old Kansas City baseball stadium. You couldn't see a thing, really, unless you had binoculars. You could not hear anything but screams. I mean, you didn't go to that to hear the Beatles. If you wanted to hear the Beatles, you bought the record. You went there for bragging rights. One little girl tried to scale the outside of the Muehlbach Hotel as if it were the Matterhorn, and she actually got about 6 feet off the ground before a police officer pulled her down.
Wow.
We went through 3 lines of security. I've been in the White House press room, and the security was not as tough at the time as it was to see the Beatles. And later, I was standing around, and I had my tape recorder, and I had press passes, and it was pretty clear that I must have had some kind of access, and these little teeny boppers came up to me and said, oh, did you meet the Beatles? And I said, well, yes. Matter of fact, I shook all their hands. They grabbed my fingers like they were souvenirs. I thought they were going to snap them off.
Did you lose any clothing in the aisle?
Didn't lose any clothing. I know that they were selling, the hotel staff were selling
the sheets?
Sheets off the bed in little strips, and in fact, by the number of strips sold, I'd say the Beatles had sheets that were about the size of a football field. One person was selling John Lennon's bath water, and a friend of mine said, you know, you could go over to that ashtray over there and pick up those butts, say, hey, kid, George Harrison just smoked this. It's yours for $20. They'd have paid it.
Wow.
It was pretty remarkable, the mass hysteria.
It was a different time, wasn't it?
It was a different time. It was. I think back about how those Prince Valiant haircuts were considered so androgynous and so threatening. And today, I mean, the early Beatles were about as threatening as Grandma's apple pie.
That's right. That's right. So any other interviews that you did you actually meet them?
I did. I shook their hands. Yeah.
Yes. You okay? And absolutely. You actually talked to them?
I did. Absolutely did. Yeah. Well, there's a transcript of their press conference, and I asked a couple of the questions.
Wow.
From the Kansas City stop on the tour.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. You know, one of the things that I find so interesting is that you have been in radio for such a long time. Mm-hmm. You have this national syndicated show, the Jim Bohannon Show, and yet it kind of came to pass, didn't it, when Larry King, you were filling in for Larry King.
It did, as a matter of fact. Yeah, this all goes back to a mechanic who left a wrench in a rocket at Cape Canaveral. Stay with me. This works.
Okay,
out.
I'm working. Okay, I'm listening.
I was working at Chicago at a radio station there, WCFL, which was owned by the Mutual Broadcasting System, which syndicated Larry's show. In the spring of 1981, Larry brought his show to Chicago and broadcast from the lobby of the local Hyatt Hotel. They borrowed one of our WCFL engineers to do the show. I found out later that during the breaks, he kept telling Larry how wonderful I was. And Pat Keene was his name, and I said, well, thank you very much, Pat. I do appreciate it. Well, come to November of 1981, and Larry had to be off. He had to give a speech. At the time, his backup was a guy named Jim Slade, who later became the space correspondent for ABC Television. He was also the space correspondent for Mutual Radio, and he had to cover the space shuttle launch in Florida on one night, and then one day, and then the next night, why he had to be in Washington to fill in for Larry. Well, the mechanic left the wrench in the rocket, the launch was delayed, Jim Slade was stuck at the Cape, and Mutual Radio realized they had no bench strength, and somebody said, what about this guy Bohannon? That, Ann, is why I am sitting here today. If I could find that mechanic, I'd buy him a drink.
That's a cool story.
It is amazing. It really is. You can look it up. In November of 1981, a space shuttle launch was delayed because a mechanic left a wrench in the rocket.
Wow. All right. Hey, that's pretty cool. You know, what is a militant moderate?
It is someone who believes that the extremes really don't have any place in this country, that extremes are almost by definition un-American, that you wind up with a left-wing wacko and a right-wing wacko, and the sensible center is left out of the equation. You wind up with, as I put it, the evil of two lessers, and that's exactly what I mean by that.
Well, okay. Well, that's how you bill yourself, right?
That is how I bill myself.
Yes, exactly. A militant moderate. Right. So, anyways, we're going to be talking to Jim Bohannon for the next hour. You want to stay tuned to this. You know, if you've got a question, all you got to do is give us a call. Telephone man Jeff is on the phones, 229-6613. We'll be looking forward to, we're going to talk some politics. We're going to talk some national stuff, but we're also going to talk more just about Jim Bohannon himself, because it's so nice to have him here in the studio to talk to him. We'll hear a word from our sponsors and be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Me, you know.
Time. Meet me at the diner on 1350 AM and WLMA.net. Host Ann Eller live with Jim Bohannon in studio today, taking pictures, I hear.
Yeah, that's right. We just took some pictures right here, and Greenwood Today was just here. It's going to be on their website, so check out Greenwood Today. Gee, Jim, how does it feel to be a star right here in Greenwood?
I like it.
You like it?
I mean, don't forget, now, I am on a network, but without our retail outlets, our affiliates, I'm on about 500 radio stations across the country. Without them, mm-hmm. I'm on the world's largest intercom. I'm talking to myself. A wholesaler without retail outlets is nothing.
Right. So. Well, I don't think you talk to yourself. You know, one of the things I like about your show is that you really spend time. Number one, I think you like to know about your guests.
I do. I very much like to know about my guests.
And I think the other thing is that you let them talk.
I try to do that. There's a reason they're on. It's because they have something to say.
Right.
Now, I have run across a few guests that needed to be prompted, to be jump-started. I've run across guests that it was like pulling teeth from a hippopotamus.
Right.
And in that case, I will jump in. But if you've got a good, normal, average, articulate guest, why should I get in the way?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, you do a great job on your show. And, of course, you're on with us from 10 to 1 at night and then 4 to 7 in the morning. Do you ever sleep?
2011 is looking really good. I have sleep penciled in for that year.
I understand what you're talking about.
You know, actually, I sleep during the day.
Do you?
I sleep during the day. Yeah, when other people are working, I'm asleep or I'm out playing tennis or something like that. I find that to be a pretty good deal. I don't fight rush hour. There are, I have no bosses at work, no meetings, no cramping of my style. I park for free in downtown Washington, D.C. Park for free.
No rush hour traffic.
No. I mean, it's such a good deal. It's a really, really good deal.
How does your family? Do they sleep during the day, too?
My wife actually, I'll take it back. My wife actually tends to, for the most part, live a normal life.
Okay.
We've been introduced to one another, but for the most part, she tends to lead a normal life. She's a retired educator, so.
Great. That's great. Well, you know, one of the other things I wanted to ask you is that any interviews that have really stuck in your mind over the years that you were just either, A, so proud that you were able to interview that person, or it just made so much sense to you?
Oh, there have been a number that were a great deal of fun. Perhaps one of the high points of my career was when I was broadcasting in Moscow from the Reagan-Gorbachev summit back in May of 88.
Wow.
21 years ago, it's hard to believe. But at the time, this little old guy walked by. Little old man. And someone said, "Isn't that Armand Hammer, the industrialist?" And somebody else said, "Yes." And so they went over to ask him to come over to sit down. And so I did an hour interview with him on about 30 seconds notice, which won the gold medal from the International Radio Festival of New York. You want to know the definition of rich, Anne? This
yes.
is the definition of rich. He said, the guy, they went over to Armand Hammer, and he said, "Well, who wants to interview me?" And they said, "Jim Bohannon from Mutual Radio." And he said, Mutual. I used to own that.
I used to own the radio network.
When you forget what parts of your corporate empire you have shed like a snakeskin, you are rich. You are rich.
So that must have been tough, though, to interview somebody on 30 seconds' notice.
Well, not really. I knew a little bit about him, and I knew that he had, in fact, done business with Lenin back in the 20s, and it was fascinating him telling me the story. Gorbachev, the last communist, was asking Armand Hammer, American capitalist, about what Lenin was like, not as a historical figure, but a flesh and blood human being. And it was fascinating. And this was a period of great change in Russia. And the great change, of course, at the time, it was still the Soviet Union. He was in the Soviet Union that time to open up a golf course. Lenin would have been spinning in his grave, the bourgeois capitalist thing. We're going to open up a golf course. That was a great interview. I enjoyed that. And one of my other favorite interviews was interviewing Loretta Lynn.
Oh, wow.
What a great lady. And at the end of the interview, she walked over to where I was sitting across the desk, and she gave me a big hug. And I'm sure I must have that shirt somewhere unlaundered. That was special. Yes,
wow,
ma'am.
That's great. So, you know, you've gotten to interview. You've gotten to do a lot of things. You ended up taking over Larry King's radio show spot.
Right, when he went to do CNN full-time.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, one of the things that I keep reading about it, that you seem normal. Are you normal?
Well, you know, I think I honestly am. I mean, it's self-serving to say so, Anne, but let me be just bluntly honest with you. By the standards of most ordinary real people with real jobs, I probably have a bit of a big head. By the standards of talk radio, I'm deadly normal.
Yeah.
Because talk radio has a lot of strange people.
Characters.
Yes, ma'am.
Characters.
Well, for example, Gordon Liddy is a good friend of mine, and I was listening to Gordon coming in. An interesting man. and a really old school gentleman.
Yes, I mean, he is.
He is just a fascinating person. He really is.
Well, we have a lot of ladies that like G. Gordon Liddy right here in Greenwood.
Well, that I was just hearing about that from your husband, and that's I understand I came in second to Gordon in the ladies' poll.
Is that, hey, that's pretty good.
Hey, I'll accept that. What the heck? I'm easy.
Well, anyways, we have a lady here, Betty Clark, and her husband, Ed. They are living out on the lakeside. They've been here 3 years. They're retired. She is from Lebanon, and her sister, Joyce Fleetwood, remembers You Will.
From Lebanon, Missouri. My goodness gracious.
He said he did not have too much trouble with finding girls. He couldn't give a book report without drama. He couldn't give a book report without drama.
Well, I suppose I was expressive, shall
You're
we
expressive.
Say. Although the part about the girls, I wish I could just bask in the glow of this, but the truth is I was not that good with the women back then. Not that I'm any Casanova today, but I'm certainly a lot better today than I was then. So I was pretty shy, actually.
Were you?
Yeah, I used public speaking occasions, this sort of thing, as kind of a cover, kind of a way to hide the shyness.
Yeah, so that's why you probably liked radio, right?
Oh, absolutely. Radio was wonderful. It was a chance to talk, a chance to be articulate, to be glib, to be funny.
Right. And nobody was going to respond to
exactly.
you if you could just cut the mic if you didn't want to hear what they had to say.
I'm telling you, and even today, when I'm at a cocktail party or a dinner party or something, I have a tendency to want to reach out and punch the button to move to the next call. But I can't.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, you know, one of the things I was wondering, too, do you ever get tired of listening? I mean, you listen to talk hosts. You listen when people call in, and you're always courteous. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard you say, well, yes, I did one time. That's enough. See ya. But most of the time, very courteous, very listening.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't
I was
joking. I was playing a little fun on you there. The point of it is, it is important to listen, and too many hosts don't. I told Ann a story beforehand, and it's worth telling now. Larry King one time was being interviewed by a host, and it became clear to him, like Good Morning Pensacola or something, it became clear to him that that host was not listening. And so Larry decided to put this to the test. The host asked a question. So, Larry, what's the most interesting thing about your job as a radio talk show host? And Larry said, well, that would be sending out the coded messages to our secret agents around the world. And the follow-up to that was, so how did you get into radio? I mean, you got to listen. Honestly, it's great to get kudos for doing what I think is just perfectly normal. But in truth, an awful lot of broadcasters are very into the I, me, 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 enough mm-hmm. about me, what do you think about me? And many of them don't listen. You've got to be listening. You never know what the guest is going to say. At any time, a guest might just suddenly commit an act of outright news.
Yes.
And if you're not there to pick it up, then you're like a shortstop who's not watching the ball dribble through his feet.
That's right. That's right. I find that. I find that we do this interview show Monday through Friday, and I talk to lots of fascinating people and learn a lot of stuff about people.
You do. Okay. You learn a great deal of stuff. I forget who said it, but a wise person said that you don't learn anything when your mouth is open.
There you go. That's a good one. All right. Well, we had another caller, Ray. He said, if you would like to be on Lake Greenwood, he'd be more than happy to make time to show you around.
Well, that's very generous. That's very generous. Actually, I guess Lake Hartwell is going to have to kind of do for the while.
Do for a while, yeah. So, well, how did you end up being down here in South Carolina? How'd you end up with a house on Lake Hartwell?
My wife's college roommate and her husband moved over there, and we visited them and decided that it looked nice, and so therefore we thought we would get a place. I suppose someday, They kicked me out of Westwood One. They just renewed me, by the way, till 2012, so that was encouraging.
That was good.
But someday, I'm sure we'll be down there full time. Until that time, they can have this microphone when they pry it from my cold, dead hands, to paraphrase the NRA.
That is one of the things about being in radio. You know, I thought that maybe someday I'd get to retire, but I can see my husband had an excellent idea when he bought this, because there's no way I'm just going to go with the microphone in my hand.
And I've always subscribed to the Milton Berle school of thought. It was Berle who said, retire to what? If you enjoy what you're doing, why would you want to stop doing it at all?
That's right.
I know there are many people out there who are stuck with jobs that they don't like, or at least they're very neutral about them.
Yes.
But if you have a job that you like, for Pete's sake, hang on to it. Embrace it.
Well, we have to anymore.
Well, anymore, there is that economic factor, too. I'll tell you, it's tough. It's tough times out there, and I'm very, very grateful. I'm blessed that Westwood One decided to renew me. So
yeah, that's right.
I'm around for 3 years at a minimum.
Well, we have lost some people that were on Westwood One.
Well, we did, yeah. We lost Bill O'Reilly, decided he just didn't.
I think
he got so much money from Fox that I don't think he needed the radio show anymore. Lars Larson we let go. Laura Ingram went to Talk Radio Network. So we've had a few departures, that's true.
We have
Fred Thompson now, of course.
Fred Thompson is really popular in our area. People are really liking Fred Thompson.
Fred, I'll tell you, is just a great guy, one of the nicest people you ever want to meet. Fred, in case you never met him, he is huge. I'm 6'3". I'm no tiny.
You're a big guy,
talk,
yeah.
But Fred towers. He's 6'5 or 6'6", easy. You know, towers over me. And he and his wife, Jerry, do a great show. Jerry, by the way, is just gorgeous. Beautiful.
Well, yeah. But, you know, one of the things, though, that I have found is when he was running for president, he was a little bit too laid back, you know. And when I heard he was going to do a talk show, I was like, is he going to have some fire? He's got some fire.
He does have more fire now, ironically enough, than when he was running for president. And
yes.
I'm not sure why that is. Some people are just better in one venue than another. But as a professional candidate for a while, I mean, he was a senator and a presidential candidate, you would have thought he would bring more fire, because Fred, in person, cares deeply about many of these great issues of the day. But for some reason, he just has a rather laconic, laid-back approach, and it doesn't come across as fire. There is fire there, Ann, but
right.
He didn't show it when
he was running. No. Now he seems to be showing it more.
Yep.
Hey, we're going to hear South Carolina news, a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Don't go away, and call us if you've got a question for the one and only Jim Bohannon, live on Meet Me at the Diner.
Lunchtime and Meet Me at the Diner. Could be funner at SFG with Jim Bohannon in studio. Here's host Ann Eller.
That's right. We're back here, Boogie. And Jim, you must wish Boogie happy birthday. It's his birthday today.
Boogie, happy birthday today.
Thank you.
How old are you?
Oh, too old now to mention.
Oh, come on. I thought you told us this morning you were 35.
I think he's 18 Celsius.
18 Celsius. All right, well, anyways.
Well, you have a happy one there.
Appreciate it.
Anyways, we are having a great time talking. We've got calls coming in left and right. God, Jim, I tell you what, you better keep the address secret over there in Lake Hartwell.
All right, we'll keep that under wraps.
Yeah, because people are wanting to know.
Well, they just don't get to know. I must have my privacy.
All right, okay. But you can come by and see him if you're right here in town. You know where we're at, on the 72 bypass between Bank of America and Burger King. We're on 1220 bypass 72. You know, I asked you, and I think we should share this, how do you keep your voice in such good shape?
It's the only one they issued me, and I guess I picked my parents well. I mean, this is it. For
this
better
is it.
Or for worse. I told Ann off the air, if you are old enough, you may recall a senator from Illinois named Everett McKinley Dirksen had a wonderful, rich baritone. After his death, his wife revealed that Everett Dirksen's secret was every morning he would gargle with a big dollop of Pond's cold cream. Can you believe
and
that?
I can't believe that. I can't. I mean,
but
like,
she swears it's true. She swears it's true.
I mean, if it was doing that to his vocal cords, I wonder what his real voice was.
I have to wonder what his real voice was. I would not do that. I'm sorry. This is all you get. If this isn't good enough, my apologies.
Well, you know, we don't have any special tuning here or anything, so this must be your real voice.
This is my real... No, this is my real voice. Yeah. This is my radio voice.
You know, one of the things we wanted to talk about was, you know, how do you come up with some of these, you know, ideas for your programs? We were just talking about the toilet paper one.
Oh, exactly. I've done this actually a couple of times, and that is, should the toilet paper hang over the front or the back of the roll? We do an hour on that, and the answer, by the way, is by about 2-1 is the front, unless you own a cat. And if you own a cat, that paper is going to wind up on the floor. It has to go over the back.
Right.
It has to go over the back. But, I mean, fun topics like that. For example, last night was anti-Thanksgiving, which is to say the fourth Thursday in May. 6 months, exactly 6 months away. There's an anti-Christmas, there's an anti-bunch of other things that I occasionally observe. And so I just ask folks, what are you not thankful for?
Yeah, that should have been interesting last night.
Yeah, well, you know, we had. I'm not thankful for this economy, you know, that sort of thing. Sure.
Yeah, but
the point is to have fun, and I have already had people tell me that Ann Eller has a bunch of fun.
We do have
1350.
Fun. Yeah, we do. We have a great time here, and start the day every day and just enjoy it. But, you know, you also cover a lot of political topics.
Oh, sure.
You know, and one of the things that I think is so difficult, I mean, I spend a lot of time, before I started this job, I felt I didn't worry about anything, really. You know, the world was out there. Mm-hmm. Now I feel I have to read, and try to keep up. But it's hard. I mean, when you were in radio years ago, there wasn't that much information, was there?
When I was in radio years ago, and it was years ago, you could read Time Magazine, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, maybe three newspapers, and you could tell yourself that you were about as informed as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
For you youngsters out there, there was no such thing as the Internet. There were not 200 cable channels. There wasn't even cable. And today, if you had a staff of 1,000, you could not cover a fraction of 1% of what is out there. So the answer is you don't worry about it. You do the best you can and realize that the best thing you can do for your show is have a life.
Have a life.
Exactly. Otherwise, you just become a grind and you burn out. I do the research I can, and then I do the show. And when the show is done, then I flush my brain and I go to the next show.
Do you remember what you said on the show right after you finished? Because people will come up to me and say, "Ann, that was terrific what you did." And I'm always like, okay, I do not remember most of the time.
Often I do not remember, Ann, and simply because I tend to retain that which is useful. And it's rare that what you've already done will be useful. What you're going to do next, very useful.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, you know, we've got all this political stuff out there, and just some few questions that I was kind of interested in. You know, they're talking about adding this value-added tax mm-hmm. to pay for health care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're talking about doing away with the income tax, which is where that tax, if we just had a national sales tax and didn't have to pay income tax, hey, I'm in.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. But as an extra tax, that's going to run into a considerable amount of opposition.
Right.
They may try it. I mean, if the choices are to increase the current income tax or just add the same amount of revenue by means of the sales tax, well, if those are the choices,
right.
Then probably the sales tax would be preferable of the two, because any plan that has ever proposed a national sales tax or value-added tax has always put in huge discounts for food and other necessities. So those
sure,
are
the
pretty
necessities
much discounted.
Are, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So if it's as a replacement for other taxation, it might fly. But, I mean, I don't suspect that'll happen anyway. My guess is we're going to do what we always do in this country. We have for decades. Print more money, and we put it on the gross national credit card, and we'll let our kids and grandkids dig out of the debt, which is now over $40,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. We are shameless in our willingness to saddle our children and grandchildren with crushing debt. And it's so much easier that way, because that way you don't have to pay for it.
Where is it going to end, Jim?
Well, I hope it doesn't end with us having inflation like the Weimar Republic in Germany had in the 20s, when people were going to the store to buy a loaf of bread with a wheelbarrow full of currency.
See, yeah.
I hope it's not like the inflation that hit Bolivia a few decades back, when which was about 10,000% annually.
Yes.
And for what you could use to buy a car in the morning, you couldn't get anything but a moped by that afternoon. But if we think that we are somehow above that, and we cannot be dragged down to that level, I'm sorry. The Chinese right now are bailing us out by buying our T-bills. And they have great leverage over us, huge leverage over us. A few years ago, a Chinese general made some comment when there was some crisis about an independence party on Taiwan and some old animosities were being stirred again. This Chinese general wondered if the U.S. would be prepared to have one lobbed into Los Angeles, a missile.
Yeah.
Today, if the same crisis arose, you wouldn't have to wait for a Chinese general. It would be the Chinese finance minister calling Treasury Secretary Geithner and saying, if you want us to keep buying those T-bills, back off of the 7th Fleet. And we are in a position right now, we have put ourselves in a position of blackmail.
Well, I was wondering, you know, Nancy Pelosi's over there, Geithner's over there, you know. Why are they over there?
Oh, they're probably talking, certainly Pelosi is probably talking mostly about the North Korean situation. Geithner?
I thought maybe they were trying to say, hey, we're okay, don't worry about it, we'll pay, we'll pay.
Well, the only thing that we really have going for us in dealing with the Chinese is that we're such a huge customer of their products that they can't afford to see us go under.
Yeah.
Because that would drag them, under too. But we have put ourselves in a position of blackmail, and it's stupid of us.
It is. Now, what about, you know, they're talking about North Korea and the bomb, you know, he's putting the missiles up and everything. And, of course, let's see, Hillary is working with the United Nations and everything. But we're in a very vulnerable position there.
Well, apparently the Obama administration approach is that we're going to isolate them and call them names. Well, I'm not sure that's going to work too well because the North Koreans have isolated themselves. Kim Jong-il loves to be isolated. I mean, that he created that circumstance. As far as calling them names, what do they care?
They don't understand the language anyways. No, just teasing.
But yes, but if they did, they still wouldn't care.
Right.
They understand one thing, and that's power. And we're not going to have peace in that region until that regime is gone.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's not looking real good over there. Well, you know what? We had just a comment here. Betty Reed called in. Her husband, Bobby, they're from Chicago. They are living in Waterloo. And she says, you guys sound great. Did you have to rehearse this today? It is so smooth.
We've been at this since 7 this morning. Every word is scripted. And pardon me while I turn the page. No, we just sat down and started talking. What can I tell you?
That's right. Did you know each other before? No.
No, but we should have.
That's right. Great show. She listens at night to you, Jim. How did you get the name Jimbo?
Well, when you grow up in the Missouri Ozarks with your name Jim Bohannon, you will be known as Jimbo. Like there are people who have looked for me in the white pages under H for Hannon.
There you go.
I'm not there.
All right. Hey, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Can you answer yes to any of these three questions? Are you worried about losing your sweetie? Has your love life taken a turn for the worse? Are you presently in the doghouse?
Then you have to come see us at Sharp Facets Gallery. That's SFG, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Call us, 229-6613.
Meet me at the diner. Host Ann Eller standing by live at SFG with Jim Bohannon, and we're going to have a meet and greet, I hear, maybe after the interview.
That's right. You can sure come by and meet him afterwards for a few minutes. I think we can entice him to stay here for a few minutes. And let's see. Oh, my goodness. This is a political question for you
well,
here.
Okay.
All right, Jim. All right. David Pellman from Belton, South Carolina, he says, did you ever consider running for office? He loves your sensible approach to so many of the items out there today.
Well, that's very kind of you, David. I appreciate that. I've thought about it. I don't know that I'd be very good at it. I think I'm pretty much good at what I do now, or as good at this as anything I would be. I've thought about it. For one thing, I don't have the independent resources. These days, you either need money or the ability to raise a whole lot, and helpfully, it would be very helpful if you have both.
Mm-hmm,
a friend of
exactly.
mine back in Missouri is running for Congress, but he is an auctioneer who is worth well into the millions. I know I don't have that kind of money. I'm not poor, but I don't have the money to mount a serious
campaign.
Well,
definitely
it'd
sucks
be fun.
It up. Yeah,
I would love to be able to serve, but I don't think I'd really be cut out for it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm an auctioneer too.
Are you really?
I really am.
Well, that is too cool.
Yeah. Actually, yes. You know, I've had to do everything that I can think of to try to keep things going here.
Well, to give us your auctioneer rap.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that.
Okay. All right.
But anyways, you're going to be going back home this evening, this afternoon?
I'll be going back home on Sunday, actually.
On Sunday, okay. Yeah. So you'll be going back up there, and you'll be back in your studio. Of course, you're doing your show tonight.
I'll be doing the show tonight, exactly.
All right, so you can tune it in and hear this great voice from 10 to 1 at night. Yeah, okay.
There you go.
All right, so that's what's going on, and Jim is here. Now, what else are we going to talk about here? Are we going to get out of this mess that is going on with the economy and everything? You know, we've got 16% unemployment right here in Greenwood.
Really?
16%,
that.
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty high. Well,
that is pretty high.
People, that's very high.
Yes,
yeah.
And of course, NAFTA was supposed to be that thing that helped us all in the South. It helped us right out of jobs. You know, we have so many, no more manufacturing, basically. We have BMW, of course, up the road and some others,
right.
But all the cotton mills, all that kind of stuff, of course, gone. But do you think we're going to get out of this mess? And one of the things that bothers me is, you know, I think they should have started giving out the money at the bottom, and that if they'd given it out at the bottom, it would have percolated to the top, meaning people would have been able to buy things, people would have been able to keep their homes and this type of thing. By doing it from the top, this trickle-down effect isn't trickling that well here in Greenwood.
No, I don't think it has either. Ultimately, you've got to have the lenders willing to lend again, and once that happens, that's going to free up an awful lot of things. I think people will be more inclined to buy appliances and furniture and, yes, cars and even houses once we get past the glut of cars and houses that we allowed ourselves to fall into. That will be helpful, and it would also be very helpful if when we go back to lending, that we decided we were going to only lend to people who have shown the diligence and discipline to be credit worthy, people who have saved up money for purchases, people who have paid their bills on time, because the idea that everybody should, for example, own a home, I'm sorry, everybody shouldn't own a home.
That's true. Well, you know, I was, who was it that was on the air the other night? Owns Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo's bank. He's the biggie out there, and he was talking about that, you know, part of the problem was the banks and the banks and the banks kept saying, hey, we'll loan. We're going to get that house back, and it's going to be worth more, you know, when we get it back.
Well, there was
and that's was where the problem kind of started.
There was a feeling, for some reason, I can understand maybe the public not knowing this, but lenders should know that housing prices would not keep going up forever. Over time, yeah, they probably will. You've got a finite amount of space and a growing population. Housing prices will appreciate, but there will be ups and there will be downs.
Right.
And you can't put yourself in a position so that you can't weather a down.
Right.
And we did.
Yes.
And I expect lenders, the professionals, the people with the MBAs, to know better than that. I do, and I don't have anything near an MBA.
Right. Well, you know, I just think it is such a shame that we are in such a situation, and that it just, you know, they keep saying, oh, things are getting better. The stock market went up today. Okay. I don't know if it's up or down right now, but it's going to take a long time.
It will take quite a while. It really will. And don't forget that the New Deal, which was the last major experiment in government intervention, really didn't get us out of the Great Depression. The person who got us out of the Great Depression was General Tojo, who had the foresight to bomb Pearl Harbor, thereby forcing us to start doing a whole lot of manufacturing and employ a whole lot of people, and of course a lot of other folks went into the military. But really, World War II is what pulled us out of the Great Depression. So whether or not our current
efforts... So do we need another war?
I'm not saying that it would be a good idea. It, on balance, it would be a horrible idea.
Exactly.
But it would jumpstart the economy. We would be better off, of course, getting out of it the old-fashioned way, which is to let the business cycle resume. I think the real key is credit. Once lending occurs again on a responsible basis, a lot of this will correct itself.
The way I've kind of looked at it, the bank's got this money, and they just said, well, you know, we've got the money. It looks nice in the vault. Let's just leave it there. Save it for a rainy day.
Well, I'll tell you something. That's the old stick your money in your mattress philosophy.
Yeah.
Money that is left sitting in a vault or in your mattress does not earn more money.
Yeah, that's
bad
true.
Bad idea.
Yeah, bad idea,
and
but
again,
still.
I mean, Granny may not know any better. I expect my banker to know better.
They should. They should be out there loaning money. Well, listen, you know, we're talking about the economy. We've talked a little bit about this value-added tax. The Medicare is, what are they talking about, 7 years or something? It'll be gone 11 years
well,
or 15 years?
I don't
years.
Think that'll ever happen. Right now, Medicare would run out of money in 8 years, 2017, which is 4 years sooner than they had thought before, and Social Security would be like 2037 or something like that. We're not going to let those programs go under. The problem is we could have fixed these things with minimal pain a couple of decades ago, but we just couldn't bring ourselves to have that much foresight. We will now fix them at considerable pain, or if not pain to us, pain to our children and to our grandchildren, but we'll fix them. I mean, they will still be there because we have in this country an immense sense of entitlement.
Yes, we do.
And,
we certainly do.
Which is also part of the problem, but believe me, those kinds of programs are not going anywhere, and we will do whatever it takes.
Yeah. What about the politicians? You know, the politicians, do you think they're in touch with what's really happening?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, on their state levels.
I think they're too much in touch with what's happening. They know that if anybody came forward with really responsible fiscal suggestions, they'd be voted out of office, because we talk a good game in this country, but we love the free lunch. We love to have everything and let our grandkids and kids pay for it. We love that. I mean, what we need in this country right now for fiscal discipline, we need three things. We need a line item veto for the president, which, thanks to a federal judge, will now have to be a constitutional amendment. We need a balanced budget federal amendment with teeth, or as I prefer, a surplus budget amendment, which, except in times of declared war or really serious economic downturns, would commit 1% of federal revenues to the debt. And the third thing we need is to make non-germane amendments to legislation illegal, including, first and foremost, earmarks. If we did those three things, we would be forced to choose. And there would no longer be the ability of politicians to try and bribe us with our own tax money by building bridges to nowhere. We would now have to weigh projects on their own merits. Is it worth it? Is it worth paying for it now? No? Well, then too bad.
Kind of like a family that has to sit around the table at night
exactly.
and decide, are we going on vacation or are we going to have to make the house payment here?
Because if the family had printing presses, vats of green ink, and large sheets of paper in the basement, they could do just like Uncle Sam. It doesn't matter. We'll do all of that. And we'll go on vacation because we're going to print more money.
That's right. It is kind of scary. And what is backing up our money anyways, Jim? This is a question I can't figure out. We used to have the gold standard, right?
We don't have the gold standard. And nothing really backs up our money except the faith and credit of the United States government. Well, increasingly, you're going to find that there's not that much credit to be put in the U.S. government because we have proven to be a pretty bad credit risk. I mean, the dollar as the world currency, it's going to be supplanted one of these days. What will supplant it? I don't know. Maybe the euro. Who knows? But we have abused that position in the world, and really nothing stands behind the dollar right now. I mean,
I know.
We are very close to rampant inflation. We are very close to driving ourselves into, if not third world status, at least second world status. And that would be a terrible shame to destroy a wonderful, beautiful country. I doubt that we will destroy it, but we're certainly weakening it.
I agree. I think we are very close to this, and it does make you very sad to look at things. And it makes you wonder what our forefathers would say if they were here today.
And our foremothers,
yes. What would they have to say?
Oh, they would. For one thing, I think they would put things in perspective. They would be, first of all, amazed that their experiment has survived 200 plus years. They would be astounded that we are a nation of 300 million, not the 4 million when the country was founded. They would be astounded that we are the world's foremost power. They would be very appreciative of a lot of things we take for granted. But on some other things, they would be appalled.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we've just talked about here, Anne, are things that would appall them.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about a lot of issues, you know, and one that's very close to a lot of people's hearts right here in Greenwood, illegal aliens.
I don't know why it is that we feel that we don't need to enforce our borders, our immigration laws. The idea that anybody can come in here is ludicrous, and yet that's the view that a lot of people hold. I welcome immigrants if you come here in accordance with the law. But to come here and take advantage of the political and financial stability that is part and parcel of the rule of law, and make as your first act coming here breaking the law is hypocritical in the extreme.
Yeah, it is. And of course, you know, then there's all the people that are here that are costing us money, whether it's in healthcare, whether it's in breaking the laws and all this kind of stuff. And the other thing that really bothers me, and we'll have just a couple minutes left, is all the Spanish. We had to, you know, we're Americans.
If you move to Mexico, the Mexican government would expect you to learn Spanish, and I think that justifiably so.
Absolutely.
And I would. But there are people in this country who really feel Nashville, Tennessee, just voted down an English as official language referendum just a few months ago. Communication is very special. If you want to wear lederhosen or a sombrero on June the 28th or whatever your special holiday is, well, good for you. I'm Irish-American, and I don't do anything Irish at all. But fine. But language is special. Language is the glue that holds the country together. Once upon a time, we insisted that immigrants learn English, and today we do not do so at our own peril.
That's right. In fact, I think, weren't you talking about last night about English about pilots and having to have a standard language?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, pilots, the international language of air traffic control is English, and everybody has to learn it because there, a moment's hesitation and several hundred people are dead.
Right. Exactly.
And yet we're willing to sabotage our children in school. We're willing to let 911 calls go unanswered for a few minutes and maybe one or two people are shot to death. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You know, Jim Bohannon, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on my show, Meet Me at the Diner, today. Thanks so much for coming here today.
Ann Eller, you are a delight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You know, we've had a good time here today. We're actually going to make a podcast of this. It'll be on our website in the next few days, so you'll have to listen to it. This is WLMA 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station. Thanks so much for being with us today, Jim.
Thank you very, very much, Ann.
All righty. Bye-bye, Boogie.
Okay, thank you.